keynote speaker is Jennifer from Chula Vista.
My name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. I thank Connor for asking me and Damien for helping to arrange this. I'm always honored to ask to speak and to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety day is March 17, 2009. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have a home group. I am a sponsor. And everything that I have, I say this almost in every time I share in a meeting, every single thing that I have in my life today is a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I was taught when I came here that you don't say no when you're asked to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I generally don't, you know, I try to be of service, and that's why I'm really grateful to be here. This meeting, I came here a lot in my first year of sobriety, and I remember they announced that they were going to be meeting at a coffee shop if anybody wanted to go. And I remember I didn't know anybody, and I remember sitting in the parking lot, and I was just like looking at the front door, and I was seeing people walk in, and I'm like, oh, they were at the meeting. And I sat there. I must have sat there for like 15 minutes just like looking. And I was so scared. I didn't know anybody and I didn't know what to say. And finally I went in and I just like, oh, you feel like a dork, but I'm just going to, I don't know what else to do. I grew up in San Diego and I didn't start drinking until end of high school, beginning of college. And I don't even remember, like, my first drink. I heard people say when I came here that they remembered very vividly the ease and comfort and like, if they had found, you know, what they'd been looking for. I don't really remember my first drink, but I know that it did not take long for me to start drinking alcoholically. I never wanted to just have one. I never wanted to just get, you know, buzzed or whatever. I wanted to get as completely obliterated as I could, you know, right from the start. But when I was in, you know, college, it was easy to like look around and see other people doing that too. And, you know, they wanted to go home eventually at the end of the night. They wanted to stop at some point, and I never did. But it was easy to like brush it off as just what people do in college. And I was able to, you know, I was able to do okay in my classes. I was able to graduate. I was able to come home and, you know, fall backwards into a job that was pretty easy and didn't expect much of me. And I was able to just keep drinking. And I just never really grew up from that point. I stayed that, you know, 17-year-old girl who wanted to do nothing but drink and I'll do the other stuff, you know, just because I'm supposed to. And I was able to kind of do the trappings of what an adult life is supposed to be like, you know, go to work, and I got married, and I had a child, and I had a home, and never really realized that was just stuff I was shoehorning in to the sides of my life, because all I really wanted to do was to drink. And this is a progressive disease, and my disease progressed. And I broke up with my first husband and my little boy. I was a single mom for about a year. And I remember thinking, well, you know, all my friends are married. I don't have anybody to go out with. I'm just going to go to the bar by myself. You know, I'm an independent woman. I can, you know, I don't need anybody to go out with. And so I remember driving it to the Shakespeare pub. I remember they told me that there were cute English guys there. And so I drove there, and I remember there was no parking. So I remember very distinctly saying this to myself, you know what, you know, if I'm going to drive around one more time, and if there's no parking, then God wants me to go home. And if there's parking, then God wants me to stay here. So I drove around one more time, and not only was there parking, but there was the rock star parking spot, like the one right in front of the door. And I said, okay, God, you know, I'm going to do it. So I walked in there, and that night I met the man that I would marry after 6 weeks of knowing him, and I felt that absolutely that was God's will. And what I didn't realize is that I was marrying into a culture and a family and a lifestyle, working class English people who drank a whole lot. And what I was doing was allowing myself to get into a lifestyle that let me drink like I wanted to drink. Because you can drink from the minute you wake up in the morning. As long as you put some orange juice in there, then you're good. You're not an alcoholic. Nobody's going to look at you funny. So for six weeks of knowing each other, we lasted for 6 years. I thought I was pretty good. So this disease is progressive, and those last 6 years were the last 6 years of my drinking, and it got worse and worse, and I had another child. So now I have two kids that I'm driving around drunk at least 2 or 3 days of every week of their lives. And if you had asked me that, do you drive your kids around drunk, I would say, God, no, of course not. Because when I came here, you know, and I read our book, and it talks about delusion. It doesn't talk about, like, denial. It talks about the word denial appears in the book once, and it's, like, not even talking about psychological denial. It talks about delusion. Like, I had no clue that what I was doing was abnormal or unsafe or a danger to my children. That was just what we did. That was just the way that I lived. And increasingly, the wheels were falling off, and I couldn't stop the feeling of hating myself and just the loathing. And I would look in the mirror, and I just, like, almost had this physical, like, repulsion because I was a horrible wife. I was a horrible mother. I was, you know, just everything in my life was falling apart. And finally, that guy, you know, he drank just as much, if not more, than I did. And he was sick of my stuff, and he left. And I found myself with a whole world that I had constructed around drinking, and he kind of, like, picked it all up because they were all his friends and his family, kind of, like, took all that away, and I found myself alone because I had everyone in my life, my family and my friends, I had kind of kicked them to the curb because they didn't drink like I drank. And I found myself feeling like, you know, I've lived in San Diego pretty much my whole life, and I felt like I had just gotten off the bus, like I just moved here. And I didn't know what to do. And I poured myself, you know, my tumbler of vodka, and I put the little bit of Diet Coke in there so it looked, you know, like it wasn't just clear, like I wasn't drinking straight vodka. And I sat in my kitchen counter, and I stared at that tumbler, and I just knew that ease and comfort was gone. I knew it was gone, and I knew it wouldn't come back. I hadn't had it. The party was over years ago. I hadn't been able to feel good from drinking for a really long time. And I was terrified. I could not picture my life without alcohol. I didn't know what that looked like. And I'm very grateful that I have a brother who at that point had about 18 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew, you know, where I needed to go. And I went to my first meeting, and I met a woman, the first woman who put out her hand to me and gave me her phone number. The following week, I asked her to sponsor me. I didn't know if she had what I wanted. I didn't know her at all, but I knew that you guys said that if I didn't do this whole deal, like if I don't take all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which entails doing steps for, you know, the rest of my life, that I'm not going to stay sober. You know, all the horrible things that happened, all the, you know, the bottoms that I hit and all the self-hatred, the faces of my children knowing that I was endangering their lives, none of that was going to keep me sober. There was no bottom that was low enough that I wouldn't just keep digging if I kept drinking. And so that's what I did. You know, you told me to get a sponsor. You told me to take the steps. You told me to just do this deal, be of service, you know, trust God, clean house, help others. And I don't know why, but I believed what you guys told me. And I have been doing that ever since. I get to work with other women, and I get to take them through the steps the way that my sponsor took me through the steps. And I get to see that light come on in their eyes, and I get to witness real, actual, concrete miracles. Like, not even like metaphorical miracles. I mean actual miracles of women who could not stay sober and who are now having wonderful, productive lives and are now in turn being of service and sponsoring other women. I get to be useful today. You know, when I was drinking, one of the two big things that people would say about me, Jen's a mess and Jen's useless. Those were my two big, you know, describing words. If people, you know, that's what people said about me. And today, nobody says that about me. Nobody says that about me. I have become uniquely useful in Alcoholics Anonymous because I get to help another woman stay sober. And I just do this deal every day. You know, you told me that I do this every day just the same way that I was with my drinking. And I go to at least 5 to 7 meetings a week. I do H&I. I have commitments. I, like I said, I work with my sponsor. I work with sponsoring other women. And because of that, I get to be a real mother to my children today. I get to just be a daughter and be a sister and be an aunt and be a worker among workers. And I didn't know how to do any of that before I came here. So to say that I am grateful, I can't even tell you. You know, I see, you know, some of the women here that I work with, and I see them tonight, and that's why I keep coming back here, because this program works, and I am eternally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank you for letting me share.